This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott. And no Rico. Well, bad news, gang. Young man's not feeling well. He's got to get better. You can't be doing autopsies when you're not feeling well. Trust me, he's at home resting up. He's saying his prayers, taking his vitamins, doing push-ups. I don't know. He'll get better. He'll be back soon. And before you know it, he'll have those scrubs on. He'll have some old dead rock star sprawled out on the operating table, carving them up, just trying to figure out where it all went wrong. But until then, we've got a great show for you tonight. No, we don't. We have the phone ringing. The request line. What a shock. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, east of the Rockies. It's the breather again. Hey, breather, what's going on, buddy? Yeah, Rico's not feeling well. He's at home getting some rest. He'll be back when he feels better, okay? And we'll be autopsying all your favorite fallen rock stars. Some of them are still alive, but the point is their careers are fallen. The music is fallen. You get it. We're just trying to, you know, play off the idea that rock is dead. Okay, all right. Yeah, I know about Greta Van Fleet. Oh, God damn it. Will you get off the phone? Okay. Goodbye, breather. All right, we've got a great episode for you anyway. A couple weeks ago, Rico and I were shooting the shit about biopics, and we had a nice little conversation, so we're going to play that for you. Enjoy.
Good evening, and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. My name is Scott.
This is Rico.
Rico.
Yeah.
I told you, like, I don't know, man. Like, we're not doing an autopsy. So just tune out if you tuned in to hear that. Not tonight.
Nope.
I told you a couple weeks ago, I texted you. I said, I went and saw the Elvis movie.
Yeah.
And you said, you know, how do you like it? And I fired off a gazillion texts explaining why I liked it.
Yes.
And I did like the movie, man. I dug it. And I thought it was very, very well done. But it got me thinking.
Yes.
We've seen all these rock and roll. Do you call them a biopic, a biopic? What the fuck do we call it?
I call them biopics.
Biopics?
But people often call them biopics, and that sounds like
Biodome.
That, it sounds like that that scene in fucking the dude that get gold member and he putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yes.
When people say biopics, I feel like they're emphasizing the wrong syllables.
Right. So I get it.
So I call it biopic.
All right. Well, it got me thinking. We've seen all these biopics recently, right? Yeah. We've seen Freddie Mercury. We've seen Elton John.
Correct.
We in our last week's episode, we talked about the Doors movie from like the 90s, right? But we've seen so many.
The Motley Crue one.
The Dirt, we talked about
right,
that.
The Dirt.
Joaquin Phoenix had Johnny Cash, did great, right?
Right, right. Walk the Line was good. Ray Charles movie.
Yes, an Oscar. Jamie Foxx won an Oscar.
Yes.
Jamie Foxx won an Oscar for that. So it got me thinking, like, who out there do we need a biopic of?
Holy moly, Ozzy Osbourne right now.
You nailed it. That was exactly my thought. Is it that unoriginal a take that it would have to be Ozzy Osbourne?
No.
You just came up
Are
with that.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, I mean, is it that obvious? Because you fired it off right off the bat, and that was like immediately my idea.
Really?
That, what?
Was it really? That Ozzy Osbourne? Was
that yes.
Like, no way. See, to me, that's the obvious choice here.
That's what I thought. Because is it that obvious?
People, yeah, because all the only door, the only window we have to Ozzy Osbourne is the MTV show, The Osbournes. Is that the name of it? The
Osbournes? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the only, and he was like already burned out by then.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see 70s Ozzy.
Yeah, Ozzy to me is the movie we need.
Oh, God, and I would pay $20
for
that.
You
got to
think about it, all right? So you've got hellacious drug consumption.
Like the epic, alcohol, like legendary.
Yes, legendary booze and drugs.
Yeah.
Not for a year, not for a decade and then get sober, but for the whole fucking run.
His entire career.
Yeah. Even Keith Richards has slowed down. Now, Ozzy now, he's in his 70s. I think he's slowed down, but he's still had episodes where he's fallen off the wagon and beat the shit out of Sharon for a few hours and then gotten back on again. It still happens. But Ozzy, okay, so you're talking about hellacious drugs.
Oh, right? Yeah.
I mean, fucking the Volume 4 Sabbath album is the cocaine record. Snowblind is on that record.
Yeah.
So we've got Sweetleaf. The whole Sabbath area, Sabbath era, just drugs,
nothing,
man.
But drugs. Coke and heroin.
Then
like the entire
when he gets fired, now he famously holes himself up in that hotel and lives off of pizza deliveries and drugs. He's just got people bringing him drugs and bringing him pizza.
Oh, is that the quote-unquote meeting up with Motley Crue by the pool where he snorts the ants?
No, that's later. This is in between Sabbath and solo Ozzy.
Okay, gotcha.
When he basically was in a depressed, you know, drug-induced, he was a recluse at this point.
Got
he just holed himself in a hotel.
Now, is he with Sharon at this time?
Nope. Sharon goes and finds him and pulls him out, cleans him up, in air quotes.
Right.
And says, you know, this is my new superstar to, you know, build a band around him and all this shit. And, you know, Sharon's interesting because she would have to be a part of this. That's why it's such a great potential biopic because Sharon, okay, her dad, Sharon is like from like a mafia family, right?
Yeah.
A radio or a record label mafia family, right?
Exactly.
So her dad, Don Arden, is Black Sabbath's manager.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I hate my dad. And so I'm going to get back at my old man and show him I'm better than him. So she pulls this drunk out of a fucking hotel. He's been living in squalor for a year, just high for a fucking year, pulls him out, puts a band around him, puts out a record, and just blows everything away. The Blizzard of Oz record, huge success. She has him go into record labels to meet executives, and it's like, well, how are we going to make an impression? Hand him a dove. He'll release doves into the boardroom. And what does Ozzy do? He releases the doves. Then he grabs one and bites the head off of it. And that makes an impression.
Sure the fuck does.
I want to see that scene on the big screen, right?
Hell yeah, I do.
And then so people start throwing winged things on stage at him, and Ozzy picks one up and bites the head off it on stage. It's a bat. He thought it was a toy bat. It's a real bat.
It's a real one.
Now he's getting rabies shots. He pisses on the Alamo while wearing one of Sharon's dresses, because Sharon would hide his clothes to try to keep him from going to the bar.
Oh, he didn't fucking care. He wore
her
clothes.
He didn't care, so he just put her clothes on. Yeah. Go to the bar, and you get shit-faced, and pisses on the Alamo. He's got so many great stories, man.
I really want to see that in a movie theater. The big question, first question I have is, who's going to play Ozzy Osbourne?
The guy you mentioned, the Dirt movie, the guy who played him in the Dirt movie.
Oh, yeah, he could do him.
Good, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't think it'd be hard. I think a lot of people already have a bad Ozzy impression, you know, under their belt. I mean, I think you get any bloke to you know, wear a wig and just mumble. I think it'd be sweet.
Dude, this
man.
Movie's a fucking home run. I don't understand why nobody's thought of this yet.
He beat the crap out of Sharon a couple times drunk.
Yeah.
There was the one incident when he got shit-faced and like was shooting their cats in the backyard.
Dude, this is such like there is a clear hero's journey in this movie. Become famous, live in a hotel, beat Sharon up, release Blizzard of Oz, become famous again, victory, end of movie, right?
Right.
Then you're signing your MTV contract.
And yeah.
Living in a big mansion, and the rest is history. And
yeah,
they ride off into the sunset.
You would have that element in there, you know, of the fucking Osbournes, and then he becomes like a parody. You know, he's the Prince of freaking Darkness, man. So... You know, that's his nickname. I think that one has to happen, man. I mean, and it's
I'm not disagreeing
like,
with you on
and with
that.
The Elvis story, it's like, I think that, what's that fucker's name that did the movie? Is it?
Baz Luhrmann.
Baz Luhrmann. Yeah, I think. Yeah. Thank you.
Is that how you say his name?
I think so. Okay. Yeah. But, you know, he had to take this different approach because we've seen the Elvis story so many fucking times. You know, we haven't seen the Ozzy story.
Like,
you know?
Ever.
Like, ever.
And that's such a... That story is screaming to be made.
And then his first guitarist, he hires Randy Rhoads out of Quiet Riot. And Randy Rhoads is a fucking amazing guitar player who's doing this classical thing before anybody else is. Mm-hmm. And is shoulder to shoulder with Eddie Van Halen in terms of recognition of what he's doing for rock guitar. And then he dies in a... freaking plane accident while they're on tour because the pilot of they're sleeping in the buses and the pilot's horsing around doing joyrides high on coke in the plane and Randy's on board the thing and they crash into a barn and blow up. And so, you know, so there's tragedy in there, you know, of Randy Rhoads, and now his mythology of the great guitar player is only helped by the legend of dying at like 26, right?
This would be such a fucking great movie. I'm stunned that nobody's thought of it.
Why has no one made this yet?
What do we have to do to make this happen?
Later on, you get Zakk Wylde in the band. You get Jake E. Lee. You get fucking Brad Gillis from Night Ranger in the band between Randy Rhoads and Jake E. Lee to do the Speak of the Devil record, which is hilarious because Speak of the Devil record, right? It's a live record. He plays nothing but Sabbath songs, all Sabbath songs. Why? Because, again, Sharon taking the piss on her dad because Black
Well, sure.
Sabbath had just put out a live record
yeah.
with Ronnie Dio.
Right.
So I'm going to put out a live record with Ozzy singing Sabbath songs.
Yeah. Kind of a kick in the nuts.
Kind
that,
of a
right?
kick in the nuts. Funny story on that one. Everybody knows live records aren't live, right?
Correct.
For the most part. The Speak of the Devil record recorded in the venue, but during sound check. They just rip through the songs.
During sound check?
Yes.
Okay.
And
what did they do, pipe in crowd noise
after? Pipe in crowd noise okay. after, and Ozzy's vocals still sucked, and he had to go in and recut them in the studio.
Even with no, even during sound check,
even
you,
just
you have to recut your sound check vocals. Yeah. That's bad.
That's bad.
That's really bad.
That's bad. So and that's with Brad Gillis from fucking Night Ranger. Sister Christian,
the time has come. And you know that you're the only one to say.
So who else do I think would make a good biopic?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you one.
No, go ahead.
What about your boy on drums, Neil Peart?
Peart?
Come on, man.
Think so? I don't know, man.
Dude, the guy's life was incredibly interesting and full of tragedy, and he
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There are so many... You could just do the band.
I would love, you know what? That's true because I would love to know. I mean, yeah, he was a bookworm and he kept to himself a lot,
but that's what makes him interesting.
I'm sure there were times when they've had discussions about just how fucking much he hates being famous and just how much he hates being poked at.
But
by
that's what makes the story
you know, and
interesting.
Yeah,
though.
No, I'm,
right?
I'm
like,
agreeing with you.
I love
for sure.
Alex Lifeson and Getty, but they're not interesting. He's interesting.
He's the interesting one. And then, yes, the late 90s tragedy with his first wife and daughter.
So
Holy
you would
crap.
Have... all of that.
And then them dragging him back into the studio afterwards
yes.
saying, we got to get back in the saddle, right?
Yes, and you would have all of those, you would have the establishment of the band, of him replacing, what was the guy's name, Rutz?
John Rutzy.
You would yeah. have him coming in there, you'd see the transformation of the band from hard rock, typical hard rock 70s
yeah.
band to cerebral prog rock 70s prog
they
band.
They can even have some shit where they're backstage touring with Kiss.
Yes.
You can throw some of that in there.
And you would see his discomfort with, you would see him taking ownership of the band as its cerebral element. Brilliant.
Thanks.
And you would see him simultaneously stepping up to be the backbone and the brain of the band while pulling back from the fans that the band earns.
I want to see
right?
that story.
That's like a duality,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
So
you're pulling back and taking...
And asserting yourself
and asserting
at the same time.
At the same time.
Right.
The dichotomy of that, fancy word of the day,
yep.
is something I would want to see.
And then,
for sure.
Not that you're rubbernecking tragedy or trying to be exploitative, but the tragedy that he had, the personal tragedy that he had to endure later in life...
Yeah.
is really fucking an interesting story, man.
So
and
on
how
top
he came
of that,
back from that, he was done with music, you know?
He was like done. They dragged him back into the studios. They did a couple of more albums. He got remarried, had a baby girl, wound up with a brain tumor, and is never going to watch her grow up. So yet again, there's that tragedy once again at the end.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think it's a interesting story, you know?
To use your words, I want to see that story, not to exploit his tragedy, but just to know more about the guy that didn't want to be known.
And here's a human story to it too, but nice. But he asserts himself in the band, but recoils from the fame that his assertion earns.
Right.
But as another dichotomy, if you will, to borrow your word, never stops pursuing excellence at his craft of being a percussionist, being a drummer. You know, we know where he goes and takes lessons later in life. This guy that's world renowned as the creme de la creme, the best of his yeah. craft, yet still humble enough and curious enough about his craft to take lessons later in life.
Yeah.
Tells
Amazing.
You that. So you want to know about that.
That
man,
is super
you know?
Interesting that you say that because again, And when you when people are in uncomfortable situations, it's you have such a fight or flight reaction, and you just want to remove yourself from the thing that's making you uncomfortable.
Right.
And as much as he was uncomfortable with fame and being put under the microscope by all of these fans that just wanted a part of him, his reaction to that was to keep pushing forward and to keep doing what he did even more so and to perfect what got him there even more so and to bury his feelings in pursuit of musical excellence. In spite of how uncomfortable it made him feel.
Right, because
that's incredible.
The more excellent he got, the more audience he earns.
Which
right?
made him more uncomfortable, but he battled that by burying it and becoming even more excellent at what he did.
Right.
That's an interesting story.
And
I would love to see that.
You could tell the story of the band dynamic, how Geddy and Alex, who are totally different personalities from his, how they coexist, how that evolves over time.
Yeah, because we don't really know that. All we really know is the dynamic between Alex and Geddy.
As buddies.
That they're like buddies.
Yep.
But we don't really know how it was between those two and him.
Yeah.
And nobody really knows.
Did they have to, you know,
impressive.
Thank you. I think that the idea is, at least how I view it, is I always view Rush as being, oh, those guys are all really close, you know, but clearly one guy is just different. So how did that closeness, how did that work?
How did they make it work for 40 years and not flinch? They stayed in Canada. They both live in Canada and in the Toronto area still, I think. He moved to California with his wife, yeah. with his new wife. So he lived thousands of miles apart. There had to be, and I want to know more about that relationship. What kind of relationship was it?
Yeah.
Did they even have one? Was it just a strictly a working relationship that they just made
just
it happen?
Business
Did they
too,
just
man.
Made it work?
I don't think
were
they
friends?
Are, I think
to
they
what
were.
Degree? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would love to know that.
And I think another interesting, I would love to see a reenactment of because I'm always curious about this, because I think if there's one flaw with Rush, and Neil is a brilliant lyricist, but I just feel like I don't even know if this is a word, but the verbosity of his lyrics, right? How verbal they are lyrically, and the challenge of the music being performed underneath it, they don't always align. And sometimes I feel bad for Geddy.
Oh, yeah. No, I know what
you're talking
about.
He has to, like, deliver some of these lyrics vocally.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there are moments in the studio when Neil is, like, going over the lyrics with Geddy and they're, like, trying to hash it out. If they're like, man, I can't sing that phrase or that line or that word.
Yeah, because don't forget, he's playing these sick-ass fucking complicated bass lines, and oh, by the way, half of the time while he's doing that, he's playing foot pedals. Oh, and by the way, in between those sick ass bass lines, he's probably playing something on the keyboard. Oh, and also he's got to sing this fucking college thesis that Neil wrote for him for this song. So you've got to have to comprehend what he's trying to say so that you can sell it the right way.
Because like it or not, I mean, he may not look like one, but he's the front man. So yeah. He's got to sell these words like they're his own.
That's right.
And there's no question in my mind, because you can hear it, that sometimes the lyrics are at odds with. And I think he does a terrific job at delivering them, but the lyrics are literary and wordy, and
very much
sometimes
so.
They're using 50 cent words as opposed to a nickel word would have worked. And it's like,
that's true.
I feel bad for Geddy.
That's
and
true.
I've said this on this pod before. I compare it to Iron Maiden, Steve Harris's lyrics. Like, what are you doing to Bruce? He's got to breathe sometimes.
That's right.
And you're like doing a book report on Alexander the Great. And
that's true.
You know, Mesopotamia or whatever is not really working. Like, you know,
it's true.
Lyrically, but
these guys got shit to say, man, and they're like, fuck it, I don't have to sing it.
So I think that, like, I think there's a story. I think there's life story there to be told.
Fascinating. I mean, you put it in those terms, then yeah, I have to agree with you on that one. Fascinating. That would be an amazing story.
And I think on its face, it doesn't have the brand equity to sell a biopic on Neil Peart. It'd be like,
that'd be a tough sell.
But I think if you
the Ozzy one, like, would be a much easier sell
because the brand equity is there. But I think with how you sell it is almost like the story of the person, almost like that movie with the cat from the insurance commercials, Whiplash, where he's like yelling at the drummer. I think there's a potential for it to be like a real powerful story about achievement and overcoming things. It doesn't have to be about the person, right?
Right.
So then one final one that I will do, and we'll wrap quickly, but I think Dave Mustaine would be good one to do. I read his biography. We all know his story. He got fired. The person who gets fired from the biggest metal band ever. There's a story there. Years of hardcore drug use.
Mm-hmm.
Starts his own band to rival that band, kind of always in their shadow.
Spends the rest of his career trying to, for lack of a better term, get back at the band that fired him, right?
Chasing him.
Yep.
And then, you know, he is a guy who was fired and carries that resentment, but then in turn fires like 40 people from his own band. And a typical kind of, he had a dad who was an alcoholic, you know, raised by his sisters, basically dealt drugs. I just feel like there's a very, you know, it's a little bit stereotypical in the rock world, but I think he's enough of like an anti-hero to make an interesting, you know, biopic about.
And you know what? I've, you know, obviously seen plenty of footage of him doing interviews and stuff, and he's smart guy. He's well spoken. He's a smart guy.
Yeah, very well read and literary.
Yeah, for sure.
And
I mean, it's kind of odd when you hear him talk about, and sometimes, I mean, I've heard him talk very politically about things too, how he had such issues with substance and getting fired from Metallica and all the other jazz. When you hear how well spoken he is, you feel like, well, how can that be the same guy?
Yeah, I would love, can this guy
I'd love to hear more about that.
How can he not have his shit together?
Yeah.
But he's just that a would train be a, wreck of a human being.
Right. I would right. want to know more about that.
Yep. So I think he would be an interesting. And then, of course, he had tremendous influence in the thrash scene. So I think that, you know, he would be an interesting figure because we all know the Metallica story. We're fucking bored of it.
Yep.
But you could tell that story from his side and piggyback the equity in their brand and their story and do it a little more interesting.
Yep, I agree. I think that those three would be fascinating biopics. Or
anyway,
biopics, however you want to say it.
Where are we going to put the emphasis on a syllable?
I'm just going to call it a biopic.
All right, well, this Whatever. Has been a little sidebar rock and roll autopsy. Good night now.
Die!
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mystique. There's no mystique anymore.
I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNR Autopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.